You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a production of WILL, public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the third day of October, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Along the way, during this half hour and the next, the dean of the Ag College here on campus and the chancellor of the University of Illinois should join us for the Harvest Hour discussions. We'll open the phone lines up for your questions, too. Should be a fun edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report, of course, is a production of WILL. That's public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
In Chicago, on a Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby December wheat at 6.40 and a quarter, 4 and a quarter higher on the afternoon. March futures at 6.61 and three quarters, up 4 cents, and the May at 6.76 and a quarter, 4 and a half higher. December corn futures unchanged today, settled at $4.54. The March contract at 4.72 and a half, down a half, and the May futures at 4.84 and three quarters, down a quarter. July corn unchanged at $4.96. November soybeans, $9.92, down 12. January at $10.08 and a half, 12 and a quarter lower. And the May futures down 14 and a quarter at $10.21 and a half. May contract for next year at $10.32 and a half, down 14 and a half. October bean meal at $2.64.90, down $4.50. October bean oil at $42, down 71. October live cattle futures today, $95.60 a hundredweight, down a dime. December at $97.77 and a half, down 30 cents. And the feeder cattle finished the October at $100.67 and a half, up a dime. November up 20 cents at $100.80. October lean hog, $66.42 and a half, down 47 and a half this afternoon. December futures settled at $60.87 and a half, down 52 and a half cents. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. A frost advisory is in effect for Elkhart, LaGrange, Steuben, Noble, and DeKalb counties in the northern and central sections and northeastern parts of Indiana. That from 2 a.m. to 8 a.m. Saturday. Tonight should be clear to partly cloudy, says our own chief meteorologist, Ed Keezer. Lows will range from 34 in the far northwestern parts of Illinois to 47 in the south central and southern locations. And tomorrow should be mostly sunny. Highs will range from 63 in far northern Indiana to near 80 in the far southern parts of Illinois. The extended forecast says temps should turn warmer. Highs Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday mostly will be in the 70s and the low 80s. Overnight lows next week mostly in the 50s. The warm weather will aid crop maturation, of course. A few scattered showers possible on Sunday into Monday and in northern and western parts of Illinois, but mostly dry weather will prevail over the period. Still, that will be favorable for the harvest conditions over the next several weeks. Let's take a look at what's happening in the outside markets at this hour. Nearby November crude oil futures are trading at $95.50 at this hour. That's up $1.53 a barrel. December futures at $93.29, down $4.63. Ethanol trading at $1.99, off a penny. And November natural gas at $7.36 and 9 tenths, 11 and 2 cents lower. RBOB gasoline at $2.22 and 9 tenths. That's 2 and 5 tenths lower on the day. And the heating oil, diesel fuel, down 4 and 7 tenths at $2.66 and 2 tenths. November propane at $1.38, 4 cents lower. The gold at $8.28.90, down $10.10. And the U.S. dollar is off 0.26 at 80.29.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to take a look at the agricultural futures markets. On the line with us from his Lafayette office and risk management services is Mike Zuzulo. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, tell me about this marketplace and what you saw this afternoon with the bailout in Washington, D.C.
Well, it's not the close we would have liked. You know, the commodities have been a good barometer here, of along with the equities markets, of how the demand mindset and the trade psychology of the demand is. And it was clear after the bailout, after an initial friendly reaction, the commodities started to go lower, and the equities followed. And then later in the session, close to the close, we saw beans really pile up and start to make new lows on the day. New lows on the week, as a matter of fact. Our representatives at Caden down on the floor, when I asked them what was going on, they said they noted that there was probably some hedge pressure on the close, along with selling by what was expected to be Fortis. And that's the bank over in Europe that has had some problems and had to be nationalized earlier this week. I asked if it could be remnants of the bank problems still kind of hurting commodities due to the forced liquidation. They said they couldn't give me a good idea of whether that's the case or not. Certainly a possibility in their words, though. So the beans were hurt all day by the veg oil weakness and the palm oil weakness over in Malaysia, and they are also hurt by the crude oil not really wanting to hold gains at all. So beans led us lower, but those beans were a real good indication of what the stocks were going to do after the corn and beans closed. The stocks did indeed make new lows. We're down triple digits. We're trying to heal that up now as we get closer to their close in another 45 minutes or so.
It was, as you mentioned, a very ugly week in Chicago and elsewhere. Corn futures were off 89 cents in the nearby December contract from Friday to Friday. November beans were, well, they were down sharply at $1.72 lower for the week. November next year down $1.50. December 09 corn was off 77 and three quarters. You expect the losses continue to pile up as we start into some serious harvest next week?
You know, we really don't expect that, Todd. We feel like the bailout package is going to help the root cause of what started all this deleveraging process. And if you look at these commodities, and you look at the equities, they've both been under the enormous strain of deleveraging, of positions being liquidated because capital is not high enough to keep the positions on the books. And the mortgage securities market, in our view, really did create that need to deleverage. And when we started to see the sell-off in commodities and equities at the same time, they kind of snowballed, and that deleveraging then kind of created the credit freeze as well. And so with the mortgage-related assets being found out to be not very useful at all and being bad, and then the Fannie and Freddie bailouts and the banks then finding out that their assets, because they were so closely tied to Fannie and Freddie and AIG, that created that deleveraging process. That deleveraging process created the credit freezing. That, in turn, created another circle of having to deleverage even more because you could not fund your positions with borrowed money. So I suspect that this bailout bill will prevent and help heal up the mortgage securities market, because that's really ideally what it was designed to do. So we're not throwing in the towel at all. I talked to a couple clients after the close, and like I said, it's not the close we wanted. We're going to have to watch it closely, because like we talked to Dave about today in the morning, we'd really like to see the crude oil go up, the copper go up, and the dollar start to weaken, not severely weakened, but weakened nonetheless. So that's kind of the way we're set up here going into Sunday night.
On my screen, the dollar's still above $80 at this time, and I suppose you think that's a real key.
It is, absolutely is, and it goes back to the higher the dollar goes, the more the trade in the financial world sees that as a safe haven flight to quality, that the world economy is sick, and the United States is the place to go when the world economy is sick. And so it means a lot, not just for the commodity traders to offset crude oil and copper and gold positions when it's strong. It's most importantly that barometer of how the trade feels about whether the global demand is getting better or staying terrible. And, you know, the deleveraging process that we've been under here, that's created the hit in the real economy. I mean, that's really the problem here we're facing, Todd, is that we've got this deleveraging going on, and that's literally turning off the spigot of money for the GDP and the economic growth in the United States and around the world to keep going on. The auto loans we hear about, how they've been locked out and not being able to borrow money for buying cars, you know, it's hitting the heart of the United States, and so it's hitting the real economy. And again, that deleveraging is the root cause here that we really want to keep watchful of. But again, I'll reiterate, I didn't like the close, but I think that mortgage securities market is going to free up now that the bailout's been passed.
Well, it should free up, but does that mean, do you think there's with the $700 billion, that it will be enough for the liquidity to really start back up in the marketplace? I guess, and I asked this question because I was reading earlier in the week about the Great Depression, and the losses that were mounted then over the entirety of that time were something in the range of $100 billion. Well, that was 1929 to 32, 33. That was a long time ago and a whole lot of money, and $700 billion doesn't sound like a tremendous amount by comparison.
No, I think you're right. I think I would equate it to we've had a massive heart attack in the financial system. This bailout package has the heart pumping again, but there's a lot of scar tissue and there's a lot of healing that has to be done in the rest of the body. But I will go back to the demand side, and you and I talked about this last week. The U.S. demand for oil is down about 7.1% for the last 4 weeks versus last year. Gasoline demand the last 4 weeks down about 4.5% versus last year. So we know the U.S. is getting hurt. We know Europe's getting hurt. But China's August oil imports were actually up 11%. Versus 07. And so we realize that the real economy is getting hurt in the developed world. We know it's going to spill over somewhat into the emerging markets and into China and India. But I think the trade has more than factored in a big, big demand hit to the emerging markets. And our hope is that if we do find a bottom in this credit market, in this financial market, then the trade will reassess how much real damage, how much that heart attack really has hurt the body and hurt the patient. And maybe it's not going to be as bad as the scenarios we're playing out right now in the marketplace.
Let's come back to a fundamental factor in the marketplace. Informa today released its numbers pegging the October crop production report due out from USDA this month on the, I believe, the 10th of the month at $12.2 billion for the crop for corn and a 3.001 billion bushel soybean crop. Both of those numbers, of course, are bigger than what USDA had in mind in September.
Right. Right, and I think that's where it goes back to your original question about are we going to have continued weakness next week on harvest progress. I don't think it'll be just on harvest progress that we would have that, but if Chicago starts talking about the upcoming October report and they start talking about how the yields have been better and then they go to the Informa numbers and say, you know, these numbers are pretty good, we don't need any more demand, we can't lose any more demand because we've got more supply on the table, I think that is something we have to watch, but I don't think that's really the major impetus to how we start the trade-off next week.
Mike, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks, Todd. Have a nice weekend, sir.
You too. And that is Mike Zuzlo. He's with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, joining us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of WILL Public Radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of this program and of Commodity Week. You can listen to both of those programs anytime you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. We'll post Commodity Week tonight by about 6 p.m. to that website at willag.org. Our guest this week is economist from the University of Illinois, Fred Gertz. We'll go through the bailout package and what he thinks of it and whether it will stimulate the economy to the point that we can get back to real business right here in the United States. That's on Commodity Week. We'll record at 4:30 this afternoon in studio It'll air on most of these radio stations tomorrow, but you can listen to it anytime you'd like after 6 o'clock tonight on our website. Speaking of folks that are from the University of Illinois in studio, over the past couple of weeks, we've been talking with a series of people from in and outside of the university. In the second half hour of our program, some of the radio stations carry that, some others do not. Today, we thought it was important enough that the guest be available to you for them to join us in the first half hour and the second half hour. We'll open the phone lines up later, but thought we might have a little discussion up front with the Dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. Bob Easter is with us this afternoon. Bob, thanks for being with us today.
Pleasure, Todd.
And we also have with us Chancellor of the University of Illinois, Richard Herman. Thank you for being with us.
Good to be here, Todd.
Well, let's start out maybe with what the University of Illinois' stance is at this point in the realm of the economics of the state, in potentially how state funding has impacted the way the U of I operates at this time, and whether there are cuts, what the coming year looks like for the university, and then we can get into maybe some of the land grant mission as well.
All right. Thanks, Todd. First, let me iterate what a pleasure it is to be here with you in Campbell Hall and Richmond Studios. As you know, we have some very good friends in Bob and Alice Campbell and Jack and Marjorie Richmond. Speaking of people who support us, it comes from the state and it comes from many of our friends and alumni. And I just thought I'd take a particular moment to note that. As may be known, have received a 2.8% increase in operating funds, plus a significant increase in the payments in kind, that is our health benefits and like, although those are handled by CMS, those monies are not on campus. The downside, of course, is that we've not received capital for 7 years, and this is really affecting projects like Lincoln Hall, which, shall we say, has been in the wings for a long period of time. And right now, there are really no funded academic buildings in the queue. But although you will note, a building we did handle through donations and internally was the business instructional facility, which is, in fact, a stunning and appropriately modern and green building coming on board. And there are many auxiliary facilities. The Memorial Stadium, which is quite an experience for those of you who have been there before, and it's quite a change. So I think there are auxiliary capital projects going on, but we worry deeply about Lincoln Hall, which is our most used, by far, instructional facility. So I think that is definitely having an effect on us and our ability to deal with just proper stewardship of the buildings in general. And, of course, you hinted at something that we all worry about is the state's financial picture and the extent to which that might result in a negative turn later on in the year.
We call those rescissions generally.
Exactly.
And do we? We never expect such things, but can you plan for them?
Well, in fact, we have taken some cautions this year, just worried about the evanescent nature of the funding here, and so we are. Not hoping to avoid it, but are being cautious in our expenditures.
Dean Easter, on the financial front, our farmer and rural listeners will know that last spring was pretty tough for Extension and some of the programs that they offered up. Were we able to recover?
Yes, we were, and that goes very much with great appreciation to many stakeholders across the state who stepped up to the plate and talked about the importance of those programs to them. Extension is funded in many different ways. There's dollars that come from USDA through the Federal Congress Congressional Appropriation, but there are also funds that are raised locally within counties by county boards, and those funds are important. And the opportunity is that the state has the opportunity to match those. And that county board match was the piece that was particularly in jeopardy last spring. And at the end, it was restored, and that's been very important to our ability to deliver programs to individual people at home across the state.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. We're joined in studio this afternoon by the Chancellor of the University of Illinois and the Dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. We'll talk with them more again in the second half hour of our program. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
In agricultural news, the U.S. House this afternoon passed a $700 billion financial rescue package by a 263-171 vote. 172 Democrats and 91 Republicans voted in favor of the measure, which now goes to the president's desk for signature. The measure also includes more than $100 billion in tax incentives added by the Senate in a vote on Wednesday evening. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke says the bill's passage is a crucial step toward stabilizing financial markets and ensuring a freer flow of credit. Employers slashed payrolls by 159,000 jobs in September, the most in 5 years. It marks the ninth straight month that the economy has lost jobs. The Labor Department's fresh snapshot released this morning also showed that the national unemployment rate held steady at 6.1%. Gains in the London Interbank Offered Rate, which is used as the benchmark for large farms and virtually all agribusiness lending, shattered records this month. Rates on the 30-day LIBOR jumped from 2.49% to 2.05% as of October 1st. The National Grain and Feed Association says elevators likely will see increased interest rate costs for existing revolving lines of credit. Monsanto raised its fiscal earnings 2008 forecast yesterday, adjusting its projection upward to about $3.64 a share, up from a previous forecast of $3.58 to $3.60 a share. Meanwhile, ag-related stocks are down in the wake of the Wall Street meltdown. Monsanto yesterday was down more than 18%. John Deere and Company was down more than 12%. ADM was down about 11%. And Smithfield Foods was down about 6%. But shares of North American Fertilizer are down the hardest after Merrill Lynch cut that sector from a buy rating to an underperform rating. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations, public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason on the line with us to take a very quick look at what's been happening in the world of cash grain market is Bruce Bostard. He's the general manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Companies out of Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
We have just a minute. Tell me about it.
Basis has been improving. Nearby corn's up 2 cents over the course of the week. Beans up 5. Barge freight has been hot, led by south of St. Louis, Memphis and south, lower Ohio River. So I think that tells us where harvest is happening down there. Basically, we're not doing any corn here. Beans, we're anywhere from 2% done to 2/3 done, depending on the area.
And your bids for the day?
We are at 420 on nearby corn and 937 on beans.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
Weekend, I think we'll be pretty busy this weekend. We've pushed the hours out, and this is the time of year when we like to remind everybody to watch out on the roads if you're out driving around, because you get people in a harvest frenzy, and sometimes not everybody's watching out enough.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard with the Ludlow Elevator Company.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Several members of Illinois' congressional delegation switched on the financial bailout measure as it won easy approval in the House today. Democrats Bobby Rush and Jesse Jackson Jr. of Chicago and Republican Judy Biggert of the suburbs voted in favor of the Senate-approved bill just 4 days after opposing an earlier version. Republican Jerry Weller also voted for the bailout. He was the only member of the House who didn't vote Monday. All other delegation members voted as before. Republicans Tim Johnson and John Shimkus refiled their no votes, while Republican Ray LaHood and Democrat Phil Hare cast yes votes again. Biggert says she's glad she and others who switched held out for the taxpayer protections they got. A former University of Illinois football player charged with a rape in Florida now faces sexual assault charges in connection with three Champaign County cases from the mid-90s. State's Attorney Julia Reed says prosecutors in 2000 had filed charges against an unknown suspect based on DNA evidence that kept the statute of limitations from running out. DNA evidence in a national database now suggests a link between 38-year-old Stephen Fagan and the assaults. Urbana Police and Reed's plan to talk more about it later this afternoon. The state's comptroller says Illinois finished the first 3 months of the budget year with a mountain of unpaid bills. And a report from Comptroller Dan Hines predicts the backlog will increase. He says as of Tuesday, more than $1.8 billion in bills can't be paid at the moment. Some faculty and students at the U of I say their rights to support candidates are under assault, and yesterday they held a rally for Barack Obama on campus to make their stand clear. It was in reaction to an official school statement informing them a state ethics law bars state workers from political activities on university property. Doctoral student Dan Colson says faculty and students shouldn't have to think of themselves as owned by the university. The American Civil Liberties Union is asking for clarification. The Illinois Attorney General's office says it's unclear how the state law applies to university staff and whether it applies to students at all. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Market Report. It's a production of WILL on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. On the line with us this afternoon to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather is Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weekend.
Well, the weekend looks like it's going to be not too bad here in Illinois. We're going to get a little bit warmer as we move high pressure off to the east and get into some southerly winds. But as the weekend progresses, we'll be getting a little more moisture in here, and by early in the week, it looks like we'll be seeing some pretty good chances for rain. So another couple good dry days, I think, in general, to get some field work done and hopefully get some harvesting started. But after that, looks like the first half of next week, at least, could be a little touch and go.
And as you take a look at the month of September, now that we've closed it out, how did it compare to usual?
Well, it was a weird month. We had most of Illinois received much above normal rainfall, but saying that, most of it came the first 2 weeks of the month, largely with the remnants of Hurricane Gustav, and then later on with Ike and this cold front that stalled up north and caused all the flooding up there. Since middle of September, there hasn't been much rain in Illinois. It's been pretty, other than some spotty showers and one or two little downpours, but not much. So in that respect, it was sort of a weird month in that way, but it has been dry for the last two and a half weeks. Temperature-wise, we ended up just a little, just around normal for the most part, a little above normal in September, but temperatures were not too far off the mark. And as you know, it was actually a pretty pleasant month as far as temperatures and humidity were concerned. We ended the month very warm the last week, running about 10 degrees above normal, and then this cold front came through, and now we've had below normal temperatures. But starting this week, we'll see things climbing back toward and above normal again.
And, but before we do that, we've got some frost advisories in effect for Elkhart, LaGrange, Steuben, Noble, and DeKalb counties in north central and northeastern Indiana.
Yeah, there's the high pressures over the Great Lakes, and it's going to be retreating slowly, so the eastern areas closer to the center of the high will have the best chances for some frosty weather tonight, but that'll be a very short-term thing because by tomorrow we'll start seeing the southerly winds kick in, and that'll be the last chance for any kind of freezing weather anywhere around here for a while then.
We appreciate you being with us.
All right, Todd.
Thanks much. Steve
okay.
Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens on a Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is the Harvest Hour edition. We'll say goodbye to some of our listeners now. For a few of the rest of the radio stations, you'll be with us as we continue our conversation this afternoon with the Dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. His name is Bob Easter, and we'll also talk and we'll continue to have a discussion this afternoon with the Chancellor of the University of Illinois. Stay with us as we take you through the rest of this half hour right here on WILL, WGFA, WHPO, WKEI, and WTIM.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. On the line with us this afternoon to take a look at the financial markets and maybe discuss a little bit about the bailout. The folks from Wachovia. Scott Moe is with us. Hi, Scott.
Well, good afternoon. The Dow and the NASDAQ have faded after the House passed the bank rescue plan this afternoon. Moments after the vote began, the Dow was up as much as 314 points. Insurance companies MetLife and Hartford Financial rebounded from a two-day stock drop of more than 25% for both companies. A weak economic report and continued credit concerns are weighing on the market. September non-farm payroll dropped to 159,000 while the unemployment rate remained at 6.1%. It was the ninth straight monthly drop in payroll. Currently, New York advanced decline is 3-2 positive in issues and better than 5-3 positive in volume. The Dow Jones Industrials are currently at 10,477. That's up 5 points in volume and just over a billion shares trading hands. Transports are up 32 at 42.10. Utilities are up a point at 4.16. NASDAQ's up 9 at 1986, and the S&P 500's up 5 at 1119. Currently have 1,672 advancing issues, 1,461 declining with 74 issues unchanged on the day. November bond closed at 119 and 20 30 seconds. It was up 8 30 seconds on the day. Brings long bond yield to a 4.12. Oil's off 15 cents a barrel at 93.82, and the London afternoon gold fix is off $24 an ounce at $828. Once again, the Dow Jones Industrials are currently at 10,477. That's up 5 points on the day. This is Scott Moe with Wachovia Securities. Have a great afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is the Harvest Hour edition. We'll open the phone lines now so you can join our conversation with the Chancellor of the University of Illinois, the Dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. Bob Easter is the Dean of the College, and the Chancellor's name is Richard Herman. If you'd like to give us a call, you can do that this afternoon. The numbers to call are 217-333-9455. That's WILL on the end, or 217-333-toll-free 800-222-9455. So 217-333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Let's take up the mission of a land-grant institution, and then maybe, Bob Easter, if you could talk about the future of the land-grant institutions. Next week, Fred Kirschemann will be here from the Leopold Center at Iowa State. He's their former director, and he has some, I think, some specific ideas about what land-grant systems will look like in the future. And he'll be on this campus the 13th of October, I believe. So how do you view the land-grant system and the future here on this campus?
Well, I think the land-grant system is a wonderful invention that has served the nation and the world very well for a long time. And I think the future on this campus is very good. I'm excited and always have been to be part of a university that embraces the land-grant mission. Land-grant mission, for those that aren't familiar with it, means that we have a commitment to undergraduate and graduate educational programs. We have a commitment to research. And we have a commitment to extending that information across the state through various farms, particularly University of Illinois Extension.
Well, tell me about the extension and some of the outreach programs. In particular, I'm interested, because we're talking to the farmer audience, about the sites out in the counties across the state. So we could talk maybe about Dixon Springs and other places where the research farms are located.
We have a system of research farms that's developed over the years that allows us to do research that's particularly suited to a region, addressing problems that are important to that climatic part or climate in Illinois. Our most northern facility is at Chabada in DeKalb County, and that one is focused on primarily corn and soybeans, as is the facility of Monmouth in western Illinois. We have Brownstown more in central Illinois, just south of Interstate 70. Far southern Illinois is Dixon Springs, a very large center with a very rich history. And then, obviously, our large center of about 3,000 acres here on campus at the University of Illinois. We have other sites that focus on primarily beef cattle, and that's at the Orr Center in just outside of Perry, western Illinois. And then our horticulture work close to the urban center in Chicago in the suburbs, just on the west side of St. Charles.
How do we fund those particular research facilities?
There's some base funding that comes through the university as part of the University of Illinois Agricultural Experiment Station. There are local funds, there are grant funds, and increasingly local groups are putting together endowments to support those. We're very excited about a development in support of the facility in Monmouth. We're saying to local farmers and other users that in the future we would expect that you provide about half of the local sustaining support, and we'll take it as our obligation to find ways to provide the other half through research grants and other activities.
And Chancellor, it brings up the idea that it's really hard to find all of the money that is needed to sustain the mission of a land-grant institution, mm-hmm. the three-pronged mission, the research, the outreach, and the education. What kinds of initiatives does the university have on a grander scale across this campus and maybe all three campuses, Springfield and Chicago included?
That's exactly the right question, Todd. The first, let me just go back a little bit to what Dean Easter captured so eloquently, the origins of this great institution, which are originally, shall we say, the agriculture and mechanical arts, so what we used to call ag and engineering. But really what we're talking about is being attentive to the public good. And I think in my view, I've thought about extension writ large and how we bring the knowledge of our provided by our research, our faculty, our staff, and our students to the public. So, and that leads me a bit into the answer to your question. So when it comes to the College of Engineering, for instance, I think their version of extension could well be and is certainly seen as working with the private sector, working with corporations. And I'm actually very pleased to see that, and it's not just engineering, but I would actually count ACES heavily in this, and other segments of the campus that are the corporate portion of our research portfolio has tripled in the past few years. And a big bump, of course, came from the wonderful arrangement we have with Beyond Petroleum, as they refer to themselves, BP, with the Energy Bioscience Institute. And I think that is a piece of what we do. Our College of Social Work, working with the Department of Children and Family Studies in the state. So I think we do seek funds broadly, both from the private sector, from other state agencies, and significantly from our friends. We're in the midst of on this campus, a $1.5 billion campaign. And the good news is we passed $1 billion last June. We're 63-64% of the way through the campaign in 52% of the time. Yet at the same time, we're in a vexed situation. The finances are such that we need to the cost of attendance continues to go up, and we need to raise a serious amount of funds for scholarships. And so we're out to do that from friends and alumni. So The funding is through the state. It's through the students and parents, and they've been asked to pay a larger share as the state's not been able to keep up with inflation, if you will, and through private fundraising. It's a complex situation.
Listeners, if you'd like to join our conversation, you can do that toll-free at 800-222-9455 or 217-333-9455 on the business partners. Does it impair in any way the ability of the university to do research on behalf of the state's taxpayers?
Not at all. In fact, I would argue quite the contrary. Many of our partners are, in fact, state corporations, ADM, Caterpillar, Abbott Lab. I think we have 1,300 of our alums at Abbott Lab. And as you know, we have a major effort going on in economic development for this community called our Research Park. We've made enormous investments there, and thanks to Fox Atkins and efforts made by this campus, that has been enormously successful in not easy times, I would add. And I think it comes a bit to the kind of students we have, the kind of faculty we have, which makes this place increasingly attractive for businesses to move in. Big names, ADM, CAT, SAIC, all moving in, expanding their space. State Farm is here with us and has been a great partner for many years.
Dean Easter, there's a similar sort of relationship with some of the commodity associations, right? The pork producers, the beef association, corn growers, soybeans.
Yeah, it's been our culture for many years to view this as very much a partnership, and we work closely with those organizations. They have opportunities to bring significant funding to the table. When a bushel of soybeans is sold, there's a checkoff, a certain amount of money that gets put into a kitty to support a number of activities. And significant in that is research, several million dollars, in fact, a year in the state of Illinois, funded through the checkoff program, similarly with pork and beef and also some with corn. The opportunity also to work with the business interests of the state, when our technology finds its expression with a business in Illinois that then markets that technology around the world, it creates jobs in this state. It creates economic development. And that partnership, we think, serves the state very well.
Yeah, let me just add one dimension here, because I think we're both talking about the way we create jobs. And if you look at the research dollars, 46 cents on every dollar goes to personnel. And these are people we hire. These are people who pay taxes, who buy homes, and who whose children go to schools in this great community. So we see ourselves as a great engine of economic development, and increasingly we're working very closely with the with Champaign, Urbana, and Savoy, and in particular on issues of the schools as well.
Well, Dean Easter, we'll have to let you go for the afternoon. I know you have a faculty meeting to rush off to in Mumford Hall. Make the trip safely, about a mile to the south of us, and we'll continue our conversation with the chancellor of the university in just a bit.
It's a beautiful day for a brisk walk. Thank you, Todd.
Well, it will be a brisk walk if you need to be there by 3 o'clock, that's for sure. We've been talking this afternoon with the dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. His name, of course, is Bob Easter. We'll continue our conversation in just a bit, 2 minutes, in fact, with the chancellor of the university, Richard Herman. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like on this Friday afternoon. A frost advisory is in effect for Elkhart, LaGrange, Steuben, Noble, and DeKalb counties in north central and northeastern Indiana. That from 2 a.m. to 8 a.m. on Saturday. Tonight, skies across the two-state region should be clear to partly cloudy. Lows will range from 34 in the far northwestern parts of Illinois to 47 in some central and southern locations. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies. Highs will range from 63 in the far northern part of Indiana to near 80 in the far south. The extended forecast looks like temps should turn warmer. High Sunday, mostly in the 70s and the 80s. That'll be the case on Monday and Tuesday as well. The overnight lows for those 3 days next week, mostly in the 50s. The warmer weather will aid crop maturation, says our own chief meteorologist, Ed Keezer. A few scattered showers possible on Sunday into Monday in northern and western parts of Illinois, but mostly dry weather will prevail across Illinois and Indiana through Monday. That'll favor harvesting ahead of a wetter period of weather. Periods of rain will begin on Tuesday and will be likely through Thursday. That'll slow down the field work. There may be a break in the rain field on Friday and Saturday, but the outlook for the week of October the 12th through the 18th has a continued chance of showers on a frequent basis. The temps will likely have ups and downs, but generally run near to slightly above average. A freeze is not expected through October the 18th.
Programming on AM 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at tnol.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Harvest Hour edition, a production of WILL, right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. In studio with us this afternoon to continue our discussion is the Chancellor of the University of Illinois. His name, of course, is Dr. Richard Herman. Dr. Herman, thanks for staying with us this afternoon.
I'm delighted.
You know, I'd like to maybe take up a discussion about the future of the land grants across the nation. Is it possible that over the coming years that land grants will find more themselves in more need of finances and possibly need to find niche markets that they will service? And have we thought here on this campus about what those niches might be, if that's the case?
Well, I think we always think about what our signature is. We can't be all things to all people. And in stressed financial times, we begin to, we always think about priorities, but that, process gets accelerated in difficult financial times. But I will tell you that on this campus, we are building on our rich past, undoubtedly the leader in the world in high-performance computing. And I think that is going to play heavily into our relations with the private sector, which will eventually and has affected the bottom line for many corporations. Our international posture is something that concerns us greatly. We try to prepare our citizens for our students to be global citizens. I mean, they will take jobs all over the world, or either in the academy, which may be in the United States, but in corporations which are increasingly global. The position of our law school and business school. What's our relations in Chicago? What is our signature in Washington D.C.? How do we continue our wonderful relations with Silicon Valley? We have contributed greatly there through our graduates, through Tom Siebel, through Max Levchin, through Javed Karim and Steve Chen, founders of YouTube, PayPal, and of course Siebel Systems in reverse order. So we always think about things like this. I think the biggest challenge is that in a way that this mortgage crisis brings on is that many people send their children to us, and I don't have precise numbers, by having a second mortgage on their home. And this is probably true at many public institutions. So what is going to happen to those individuals? Will we be losing the middle class unless they have access to financing? So that is perhaps the question that is most on my mind.
Any thoughts for solutions?
Well, we have announced effectively a $200 million campaign for scholarships. That's 100 new, which will be matched. Honestly, I think we could probably, based on what we anticipate as need, go to $300 million. So we are going to be out there appealing to our friends and to other private monies for this purpose. Hopefully, that will be sufficient. It is a large national problem, and I think the over the years, for instance, Pell Grants for those who live at the say the first two economic quintiles have not gone up very much, and I think the federal government needs to be attentive to that. State financial aid has always been robust, and we're grateful for that.
So your push is to make a land-grant education, at least in this state, more accessible to all?
It has to be. A public higher education sees 85% of those who go to higher education. We cannot, we only at great risk would think about abandoning that mission of accessibility. And that's something we can ill afford to do and would not do.
On that note, how do you deal with rural communities and developing students out of those communities, for instance? And I don't remember what the admissions are. They differ from one place to another. But a small school with less than 50 students per class, the top 10% might not include some awfully good students.
Right.
And how do you deal with that?
Well, I think the one is the answer is we know our high schools quite well, certainly within this state. We've been fortunate enough to receive many of their graduates over a long period of time. So while we are, as you perhaps note, seeking those in the top 10% of their graduating class, we do full folder reviews, and we know what the meaning of the courses are. But we're also about, you know, giving kids an opportunity, individuals who perhaps might not fit that 10% profile. I started a program 4 years ago called Illinois Promise, targeted at those children of families who live at the poverty level. And we now have 650 wonderful students on this campus because of that program. And unfortunately, ACT, for instance, is tied heavily to economic circumstances. So we're trying to get beyond the ACT and beyond the top 10%, even as we struggled to get more and more of the top 10%. So it is a balancing act. And I think one of the other ways we are reaching out to rural communities is by partnering with the community colleges. So this year, for instance, we are engaged heavily with a dozen community colleges. And with Parkland, who's been a great, great friend for us, we admitted a common cohort of 60 students jointly admitted to Parkland and this university, and based on certain metrics of performance, they will automatically be admitted here in their junior year.
Chancellor Herman, very nice to have you with us on the program this afternoon. Thank you very much.
It's a great pleasure, Todd.
Chancellor Richard Herman of the University of Illinois joining us here on the Closing Mark Report. Our thanks to him and to the Dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. Don't forget to tune in if you get the opportunity on WILL for Commodity Week. Tomorrow morning, Fred Gertz will join us. That's airs at 11:30 a.m.